Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. Cosmos Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. Cosmos DB is a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation.
Introducing Show 13 with guest Raki Thedraj. Raki is one of the Cosmos DB product managers and is involved in supporting the elasticity and ingestion features, plus security initiatives and AI customer reachouts. So welcome, Raki.
Thanks for having me in the show, Greg.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. And so look, what I get everyone to do the first time they come on board is tell us, like, how do you come to be involved with Cosmos DB at all?
Sure. So I'm Raki Thedraj. I'm one of the product managers in Cosmos DB. I've been here for over a year now. This has been an amazing team where everyone is quite passionate to do more. And my prior experiences have been around data analytics and data engineering, and I'm based out of India.
Great. Well, listen, what I was hoping we'd cover off in this show are things around throughput and provisioning and auto scale and things like that. So maybe if we start with what we're provisioning. So it's in terms of request units. So what's a request unit?
Sure. So to understand the concept of dynamic auto scale, as you rightly called out, some of the basic concepts like request units and provision throughput have to be just recapped. So I'll start with what is request unit. So request unit is a fundamental part of Cosmos DB pricing model. So it determines the amount of throughput capacity that is needed to perform any given database operation.
We have like an insert that'll cost a certain number of request units, we might have deletes, we might have complex select queries, they might take a whole lot more.
Exactly. You're right, Greg. So Cosmos DB does.
And so we provision the throughput. And so what does that mean? So we do it at the database level originally or container level?
Yeah, we can provision it at both at the database level or at the collection or container level. So if we want a shared throughput for one database which has multiple collections, then we can provision it at the database level. But if we want a dedicated collection level throughput, we can provision the RUs at a collection or container level.
So the scenarios where we would do both would be where we want an overall limit for the database, perhaps, but we also want particular containers to have certain limits.
So we could have a scenario, Greg, where we want to, the collection is not consuming the complete throughput, and we want to have the throughput shared across multiple collections to optimize the cost. So in those scenarios, we give an overall throughput at the database level, and it gets shared across the containers or collections. So in that way, the end user would end up saving costs because maybe one of the collections is peaking at daytime and another collection is having the maximum consumption during the night. So in that scenarios, you can get a benefit out of shared database throughput allocation.
Yeah. And I suppose what we should also then mention too is that it isn't just a case of keeping the cost down, is that we need to have the throughput high enough so that the work gets done.
Yeah, exactly. So when we have the amount of data that has to be stored in these containers and the operations that are needed to be performed once the data is available on these containers, we do have a calculation that gets done on the amount of throughput that has to be allocated based on the, say, for example, I have around 10 terabytes of data, which is 10,000 GB. So if I have to provision that appropriately and have the queries and the writes done at the right level of performance, I need to allocate the RUs based on the storage. So if it is 10,000 GBs, I need to at least allocate 2.5 million RUs to begin with to do the initial loading so that I have the appropriate partitions created and the RUs gets distributed and we can do the parallel processing.
And if you don't have the amount of throughput provisioned high enough, of course, there's the dreaded 429 errors that come back.
Yeah, we do have rate limitings and throttlings. We do have some metrics available in our metrics portal. We can assess that and try to... we have metrics like normalized RU consumption, which helps us to understand that consistently our partitions are having 100% usage. And there's also rate limiting happening with 429s and also the threshold counts getting exceeded. So we can go ahead and increase the RU accordingly and avoid this rate limiting and throttling.
Yeah, so the 429 error, if we see that, that basically says too many requests, right?
Yeah, so 429 indicates that we are having the consumption, that is, we do have consumption RU and provisioned RU. Whenever the whenever the consumed RU is trying to exceed the provisioned RU, you do end up getting rate limiting, indicating that we do not have sufficient throughput allocated to perform the given operation, the parallel operations.
And of course, as you were saying, we don't want to provision it too high, because otherwise we get the work done, but it costs us too much.
Exactly, Greg. So striking the right balance and also quantifying it with the metrics consistently will help us to both get the work done and also have our cost in an optimal way.
What's your suggestion as to how to work out an appropriate starting point for calculating what throughput is even required?
Sure, Greg. To begin with, like as CosmosDB provides two types of provision throughput. So first, we need to understand the nature of our workloads. If our nature of the workload is quite predictable, then we should recommend the users to go with a standard or manual where a fixed RU gets allocated based on the storage consumption and the queries and the writes that would happen. We would allocate the RUs. Say, for example, if it's a predictable workload where I have 10 terabytes, I can, and there is a consistent operation of reading and writing where I would require 200,000 RUs to be allocated incrementally, then we do allocate 200,000 RUs as the fixed standard RU. In this manual case, the customer will be charged for that entire 200,000.
Yes, indeed. I was just sort of wondering, though, how you find people do estimates on it. I suppose one of the options is that when you make a request, you can have in the request options something that says, hey, I'd like to know how much this cost.
Yeah, we do have our pricing calculator, Greg, where we can query in, we can key in our estimated storage and what is the input request we are looking like, and we can try to get the indicative pricing and indicative RUs. And based on that, customer can have a starting point. There can be scenarios where the workload is quite unpredictable. In that scenario, we can begin with autoscale in a range of 100 to 1,000. That is the threshold max limit being 1,000, and it scales from 100 to 1,000. And depending on how the workload is scaling, the customer can incrementally increase the workloads. That could be a possibility. And depending on the storage size, customer can still decide the initial RU allocation as well.
And so do you think in terms of calculating what to start with, you think maybe starting with an auto scale option and just seeing how busy it gets is a reasonable way to calculate it now? Or
yes,
do you see people trying to use a calculator and trying to add up inserts and deletes and things like that? Or do you see them typically trying to measure each request and see how much it takes? Or what? I'm just sort of wondering what you typically see people do.
Sure, Greg. So depending on the scenario, like I called out, if we have decided that the user's workload is predictable, then we say go with manual. If the user's workload is unpredictable, where varied traffic patterns are there throughout the day, then we recommend autoscale. And if the storage and the query patterns are clear, and we have a quantification for that. We can use our calculator and try to come up with an indicative cost. But if the workload is totally new and the customer is not aware what is going to be the futuristic scale, then we can start with an indicative auto scale range, as you rightly called out, the min and the max. And depending on the threshold, what we are reaching for the reads and writes, we can incrementally increase the RUs at any point in time.
Yeah. So I suppose nowadays we've then really got three options, is it? So we've got provisioned at the database or container level, we've got serverless, and we also have the auto scale options. And so what are the scenarios where you'd use serverless?
So when I have a application which is used for my dev and test workloads, I would recommend going with a serverless. Or in scenarios where my workload patterns are pretty new and I do not know what is my predictable RU which I would be using, then serverless comes into picture as well. So predominantly when you start a new application, you can initially start with serverless. And once you have a stability, you can transition it to provisioned at any point in time.
Yeah. And so how would you compare the two? So when would you use serverless versus autoscale?
So when my workloads are like predominantly, I'm just starting off, I have my dev and test workloads where I have to just figure out how I'm navigating my RUs, I can start off with my serverless. Whereas when I need my performance and consistent performance and latency commitments, I can switch over to autoscale where my workloads are unpredictable, but I have a uniformity in my workloads, I can go for autoscale. Where I have non-uniform workloads, still unpredictable, I can go for dynamic autoscale.
If you have, let's say, autoscale and it's at a lower level and then more requests start coming in quickly, I'm just sort of wondering, like, what sort of latency do you have before it starts answering at the higher rate?
So if we have an autoscale collection, and my max RU is set to 10,000. So I would have my collection between 1,000 to 10,000 RUs. So depending on the, say, as you said, it starts with 1,000 and starts peaking at 10,000. Consistently, if my normalized RU consumption is exceeding 100%, that indicates that my 10,000 limit for that collection isn't sufficient for the queries and the reads I'm doing. So I will have to increment my RUs there.
Cool. And the granularity for this is still at the 1 hour level, is it?
Oh, you mean the billing granularity?
Yeah, the billing granularity.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, see, if I work with something like Azure SQL Database, originally they had it hourly, but eventually it became per minute. But I'm presuming the increments here are still per hour, right?
Yeah, you're right, Greg. So for every hour, we get the bill calculated based on autoscale or dynamic autoscale. And accordingly, the customer would get the cost.
Yep. Now that makes sense. And yeah, so I'm just trying to wrap my head around what's going to work best if I have, I'm thinking like if I have a variable workload, then autoscale probably sounds appropriate. If I have an unpredictable one where like there's, or maybe or unpredictable is still really auto scale, but I suppose if you had something infrequent, is that where you'd tend to have also serverless instead?
So if you mean to say uncertain, can you repeat that?
I'm thinking if I have an application that every 3 or 4 days somebody uses it for a while and then they don't use it again, I'm presuming serverless is going to be a better option for that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a typical scenario of dev and testing where we do the tests for a specific period of time in UAT or in the dev box, and then we move on to the next cycle. So during that period, there would be a lot of idle times. So you're right in saying that serverless will be useful in those scenarios, certainly.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And the other one, I presume that's a little bit different to that, is the sort of scheduled workload. So if I have something that happens for an hour or two, oh, let's just say an hour, but it happens at the same time every day. Does that again fit probably better as a serverless?
Hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data-related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com.
So it depends on, again, if it's a testing workload which requires less amount of RUs. We do have some limitations of how much RUs we can use in serverless. So if we have some workload which is small, which is tested on a daily basis at a certain point in time, certainly we can go for serverless. But we have huge workloads where performance and latency is required to be guaranteed. And there the recommendation would come for the provision throughput, Greg.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And the other thing that is different about autoscale, I presume, is the fact that if I'm not using it, it's what the idle cost is.
Yeah. So in serverless, as you rightly called out, we do not have any idle time costs. But in autoscale, the system scales between the max 10% of the max RU to the max RU. So at any point in time, even in idle state, the user would be charged for the 10% minimum threshold.
Yeah. So if I have 40,000 RUs per second as the maximum provision, maximum amount, then what we're saying is I'll still get charged for 4,000 RUs per second, even if it's not being used.
Yes, you're right. And depending on the scenario,
so something with long periods of idle time feels like it would be better to be in a serverless in that case.
Yeah, long periods of idle time and the workloads are smaller workloads with low traffic. Yeah, it is recommended to be on serverless. But if the volume is very large and you have high traffic intermittently, and your commitments on SLA and performance has to be there, then we'll have to recommend the provision throughput. For example, we have 500K RUs per container per day. That's the limit for serverless. But if we have containers which we have to scale beyond 1 million RUs, then provision throughput is the recommendation, even if the workloads are having varied traffic patterns.
My recollection also is that there was a relationship to the amount of storage as well.
Yeah, you're right. So there is a there is no storage limit we have for provision throughput, but for serverless we do have a limit.
And that was something like there was an option with something like max RUs per second divided by 100 was the number of gigabytes or something. So if we increased the amount of storage, that was another thing that would actually push up the provisioned cost. Yeah.
So as of today in serverless, we have a storage limit of container. And the one you're referring to is the storage limit on autoscale mode. So if you have an autoscale container, which is scaling between 4,000 to 40,000 RUs, then you can store a GB of storage size of 4,000. If the moment it exceeds from 4,000 to 5,000, the system will automatically increase the autoscale limit to 50,000 RUs. That is 5,000 to 50,000. Because there's a measurement of 1 to 10 times of the storage. So if storage limit has
to be... why that's there? I'm just sort of wondering, is it just that they think if there's more data, you need more resources or...
Yeah, so we have a calculation on number of partitions and we distribute the data across the partitions and we query those partitions and write to those partitions to maintain the optimal latency commitments and the optimal throughput. We will have to maintain this backend storage because that's how the distribution of data happens in the backend, Greg.
Yeah. And so listen, the autoscale... And as I said, the serverless options have been around a while. What can you change once a container is already in use? Because I know some of the things with Cosmos, it's been a challenge sometimes, is that there's things you can't change about a container once you create it. So like, how flexible is it in terms of what you can change?
Sure. So at any point in time, if I have a manual provision throughput, I can convert it to auto scale, depending on the use case. If I feel auto scale is more optimal, because now a predictable workload has become unpredictable due to the business scenarios, at any point in time, I can change from manual to auto scale and auto scale to manual again. And right now we are working towards having the serverless to provisioned conversion as well. That's also going on. So we do have, we are working towards the flexibility at every throughput levels to have the option to convert from one to another depending on the use case.
Is there a thought about letting you more easily change? I know there was some discussion around things like partition keys and those sort of things. I'm just thinking about in terms of being able to change things on the fly.
Yeah, there is work happening on that also. Because earlier when partition key had to be changed, we had to create a new container.
Yeah, create a new container and migrate all the data. And That's what I've seen people doing quite often. Yeah.
Yes. So now
it's usually because they've chosen very poor partition keys in the first place, I should say. that's the scenario that they've ended up in, where they suddenly need to use a different partition key.
Yeah, exactly. So in the initial, maybe the application, when they started, they thought that this would be sufficient to scale their workloads. But as the queries and as the volume of data gets increased, they understand that the current partition key is not sufficient to meet their needs. And that is when we go with an alternate partition key.
Yeah. And yeah, that is, as I said, one that I've sort of run across a little bit along the way. And it's, again, they haven't really thought through what the logical partition structure will be, once things start getting stored. But also with the auto scale, previously that was at the database and container level. But recently we've been talking about dynamic scaling, and so now new options around partition and region.
Yeah. So so auto scale and dynamic auto scale. So dynamic auto scale is also can be enabled at database level or collection level, you rightly called out. And dynamic auto scale is a property that gets set at a database account level, and all the collections and the shared databases under that account will be automatically, which are in auto scale mode, will be enabled for dynamic auto scale. And what we mean by saying per region and per partition is, we do have for geo replication, we do have multi-region for customers.
Yep.
So if I have two regions for a customer, every region will have its own partition. Say I have five partitions in each region. So what auto scale used to do is, if one partition across these two regions used to become hot and scale to 100%, then the charge used to happen 100 times all the partitions.
Yes, 100%. Across all the other ones. Yeah. That was very much the case. Yeah.
Yes. Whereas in the new auto dynamic auto scale mode, if one partition is scaling to 100% and others are just at 40 to 50%, then all the partitions get scaled and regions get scaled just based on their consumption.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, because there are many scenarios where you've got one region that's quite hot and being used heavily, and then you might have another region off the same one that basically is just being used for occasional
disaster recovery or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I also see it where the secondary region is, again, only used for, I don't know, an hour a day or half an hour a day or something like that. It's not something that's used constantly like the primary region. And in that case, yeah, having the billing where it's the same for the primary region and all the others is problematic, you know, in that regard. Although I suppose you've got some possibility there that if the changes are having to be replicated across from a primary region to another region, I suppose I'm trying to think about the effect of auto scale there, where you've also got to have that other region keep up with the data that's going on the primary. To some degree, I suppose it again depends on the isolation that you've chosen for that.
Sure. So for dynamic autoscale enabled accounts, like since every region operates independently based on their consumption, so if there is a primary region where writes are happening, the replication charges get reflected in the secondary region's metric as well, normalized RU metric. Because we do not, otherwise it would look as if the secondary region is completely idle. As in the autoscale, where we never used to explicitly show the replication charges in autoscale, but in dynamic autoscale, since everything is based on per partition and per region charge, we do show the replication charges on the secondary region as well. But overall, the benefit for the customer is he gets charged only for the consumption.
Yeah, these all seem like great options to help managing the costs of the service, and that the options just seem to get better and better. That's a really good story.
That's true, Greg. And we had a very good feedback on this feature from customers during our public preview, because customers have saved around 15 to 70% on their autoscale cost, depending on their workload patterns. So they really found this feature very useful and timely for them.
So listen, that's pretty much bringing us towards time. Is there anywhere people will see you or sessions or anything, or any shout outs that you want people to try something out or anything?
So this feature, you're talking specific to this feature?
No, just in general.
To the customers, my only request would be is, like, most of them have started trying this feature, but for whom who are yet to try, if they can start trying this feature for their non-uniform workloads, like, it would be very optimal for them to use their RUs towards expansion and optimization.
Yeah, that's
great. That would be a recommendation.
There's the Cosmos conference coming up. Are you involved in that at all?
I'm not traveling from here, but I'm doing any kind of support needed for the documentation part and so on.
Yeah, that's excellent.
And we do have some upcoming features on the elasticity space and various other spaces, like helping customers on the partition merge feature, helping them provide in more automations towards it, and also sharing the throughput across resources, the throughput pooling.
That's all just becoming more flexible. That's really good. Yeah.
Exactly. And we do have a lot of enhancements on the AI and vector space as well, Greg.
People should keep an eye out for the upcoming conference. That's for sure. That's good. Yeah. Hey, listen, so thank you so very much for your time today, Rick.
Thank you, Greg. It was great to be part of the show.
Good fun. Thank you.